Homeschool leader, do you feel confused or overwhelmed by the job of running your homeschool group? You're not alone. Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA, is here to help. Carol is an accountant, author, and retired homeschool mom who understands you. Her website has helpful information on co-ops, paying workers, and managing the money in a homeschool group. If you need personalized advice, set up a consultation with Carol. She's happy to discuss your particular situation. Visit homeschoolcpa.com today and get the information you need to successfully run your homeschool group. Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, everybody. This is Carol Topp, and welcome to the Dollars and Cents Show number 18, Paying Workers in a Homeschool Organization. This is part two of a two-part podcast on paying workers. In the first part, I talked about the different kinds of people you might have in your homeschool organization, including volunteers, employees, or independent contractors. In this episode, I'm going to talk about the different forms you need to file with the government as well as giving to your worker. I think you'll find the show notes very helpful. You can find those over at dollarsandcentsshow.com. Look for episode number 18, Paying Workers in a Homeschool Organization. Or you can also find them over at homeschoolcpa.com. Look for the podcast and again, show number 18. This was a pre-recorded webinar I did a little while back, and so you'll find me answering questions that were given during the webinar, and I think you might find those helpful too.
Let me talk about the IRS forms if you're going to hire an employee. First of all, I'm going to say in my work, in the book, Paying Workers, I give you a checklist of everything you got to do if you're going to hire an employee. All right, one of the first things I say is, you need to get an employer identification number called an EIN. An EIN is sort of like a social security number, but for an organization. Businesses need them. Groups like homeschool groups, nonprofit groups need them. I have one for my business. It's like a social security number, only for businesses and nonprofits instead of for people. EIN. You get them from the IRS at their website, irs.gov. And I have some information on my website at homeschoolcpa.com. If you go under Leader Tools and Articles, I've written some articles about how to apply for an EIN. So read that if you don't have one already. And what I suggest you do is you go print out the form that the IRS has, fill it out so you're familiar with the questions that they're going to ask you. And they're going to say, why do you want this? And you could say, well, for banking purposes, because I want to open a checking account, or I'm a new organization, or I want to pay employees. They have a bunch of different reasons. Give yourself your official name if you don't have one already. This is like sometimes the first time anybody has any contact with the IRS is when they apply for an EIN. Sometimes the first time a homeschool group has contact with the IRS. And a lot of people don't like that. They don't like dealing with the IRS. So they have lots of questions on my blog at Homeschool CPA about dealing with the IRS and applying for your EIN. But then you can go online and you can type in the information that you saw on the form, and you can get your EIN in a matter of minutes. So that's the first thing. Get an EIN. The second thing would be then open a separate checking account for your homeschool organization using that EIN. So go to the bank and say, look, I've got an EIN from the IRS. I want a nonprofit checking account. Assuming your homeschool organization is a nonprofit. If it's your business, if it's a for-profit, then you say to the bank, I want to open a business checking account. Here's my EIN for my business. All right. But if you're hiring employees, one of the most important things you need to do is read IRS publication number 15. It's called the Employer's Tax Guide, Pub 15. Go to irs.gov. In the search box, type Pub, P-U-B 15, Employer's Tax Guide. You can print it out. It's kind of long, I think. I think it's over 40 pages. Not all of it will apply to you, but they have this wonderful list at the very beginning of it that says these are the due dates. These are the forms you got to fill out. Okay, I'm going to go over some of them. But the due dates are kind of important, so you need to do that. There are two forms you get from every employee and you keep for yourself. You don't send them in. One is called a W-4. You might be familiar with that. It's where they tell you their name, Social Security number, how many withholdings they have. Okay, it's the official way to collect the Social Security number from the worker. And the other one is called an I-9. The Immigration Department wants that as proof that they are in the country legally. You have them fill out those forms, and you keep them yourself as records. You don't send them in. But then you know the other two forms, or at least the other form you probably have heard of, a W-2. At the end of the year, so now about this time, January, you have to fill out a W-2 for every employee saying, what did they earn, what was withheld in federal income tax, what was paid in Social Security and Medicare for them. And you may not know this, but there is also another form called the W-3. The W-3 summarizes all the W-2s, and you send the W-3 and copies of the W-2s to the IRS. All right. You have to send them to the employees by January 31st, so that's only 2 weeks away, and then you send a copy to the IRS by February 28th. You can get these forms, W-2 and the W-3, from the IRS website. You cannot download them. They don't let you download them, but you can order them. Just type in order forms. It might be even on the front page of the IRS website, how to order forms. You probably have to wait 10 days to get them in the mail, though. You cannot download them because the IRS has special red ink that their computers, that they have like optical scanners, and it doesn't work on the download. So you cannot download a W-2 or W-3 to fill in. You have to order them from the IRS or go to an office supply store. Or lately, I've been using an online service called FileTaxes.com, and you can type in your employee information there, name, address, Social Security number, how much they were paid. And they will then take care of filing the W-2 with the IRS, mailing W-2 to the employee, mailing you a copy. And they charge, like, I think it's $3.99 per employee. That's a nice system. I like it. If you're only dealing with a handful of employees, it's really a good way to go. Or you could certainly consider using a payroll service, and they'll take care of it for you, but they're a little more expensive. Okay, one last form that you got to deal with if you're dealing with employees. Well, there are probably more forms, but at least in terms of paying the federal income tax. It's called the Form 941. This is how you pay your employer taxes. Employer taxes are Social Security and Medicare, and you have to pay those when you hire an employee. All right. If you don't pay the employee very much, typically under $4,000 a year, then you file a slightly different form. Excuse me. Called the Form 944, and you only have to file that once a year. The Form 941 to pay your employer taxes, Social Security and Medicare, you have to send that in 4 times a year. The IRS does not want you to wait. They don't want to wait to get their Social Security payments, okay? They want employers to send that in 4 times a year. Unless your very small amount is owed, then you can send it once a year and use a Form 944. IRS Publication 15, the Employer's Tax Guide, goes over all that. I've only begun to scratch the surface of what's involved if you pay employees, and I just spent 10 minutes talking about it, didn't I? You have to worry also about what your state might require for people who are employees. You have to worry about unemployment compensation, and you have to worry about workers' compensation if they get hurt on the job. So there's a lot involved in hiring employees, which is why most people want to hire independent contractors. Okay, I'm going to go into that next. Here's the paperwork involved if you hire or pay somebody as an independent contractor in your homeschool group. First thing, you have to get an employer identification number again, just like people who are employees. If you are hiring and paying an independent contractor, get that EIN. Read another publication called Pub 15A, very similar to the 15, but 15A, the Employer Supplemental Tax Guide. They had to write a separate one just to handle how do you pay independent contractors. You collect a form from every independent contractor. From employees, we collected the W-4. From an independent contractor, you collect from them what's called a W-9. You can download that one at the IRS website, the W-9. You have them fill it out. It is the official way that they tell you, this is my legal name, this is my Social Security number. So when you give them a form at the end of the year, you have their official name and Social Security number. Get that W-9. Keep it in a safe place. At the end of the year, we're now in January, you give them what's called a 1099 miscellaneous form. Looks an awful lot like a W-2. I have a copy of it in that ebook I keep talking about. Those you cannot download. Sorry, again, that's the weird thing about the Inc. and the IRS. You have to go to an office supply store. You can order them from the IRS website if you want to, or use a filetaxes.com to help you file these things. You only have to give a 1099 miscellaneous form to someone whom you have paid more than $600 in 2009 in a calendar year. Okay, so if you had a lot of people working for you, but they were doing real small jobs, like the question about data entry, registration for an event, if you just pay that person like $200, phew, you don't have any paperwork to file. It's her responsibility to still report the $200 on her tax return, but you as the homeschool organization don't have to send any paperwork to the IRS to report it. Okay, so $600 is the benchmark. It does not change. It's been that for a very long time. If you pay someone over $600 a year, then you have to give them a 1099 miscellaneous, and there's a form, I think it's called a 1096, that you send to the IRS. A 1096 is the summary of all the 1099s. All right? So they just, it's a real simple form. You check a box and tell them what the total dollar amount is. But it's another form, and that's the one with the special red ink that you cannot download. You can look at it on the IRS website, but you have to either order it from them or go to an office supply store or something like that. Again, I strongly consider, I suggest you consider using something like filetaxes.com. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a great website when I've used it to help some of my clients file their 1099 miscellaneouses. Okay, that concludes the stuff about the forms. If you are a homeschool organization and you either pay employees or you pay independent contractors. Any questions so far? That was a lot to cover in these forms. Whew. They're not too hard once you've done it once, to be honest. Or if you've never done that before, certainly ask somebody, maybe the person who does bookkeeping at your church. Maybe they're familiar with the forms. Maybe someone who runs a small business, they probably use those forms and filled those forms out several times. Here's a question we've got. The 1099 is the form that, in your earlier example, the teacher who received $1,000 and the $200 value-free class would receive. You are correct. In my example, I had a teacher who was an independent contractor working for a homeschool organization teaching geography, did I say, the 7th and 8th graders. She was paid $1,000 for teaching the class. $200 was the value of the free class to her son. So her 1099 miscellaneous form had her name, address, had her Social Security number on it, had one little box that said $1,200 in it. And that's what she had to report on her tax return. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in 1 minute about how she reported that. We've got another question. If the parents in our group pay the teachers directly, do we still need a W-9? No, probably not, because your parents are paying those teachers directly, much like you went out and hired a private piano teacher, hired a private tutor. There's, at this point, thank goodness, there's no reporting from individual to individual. It's only when a business pays a worker that the IRS wants to follow up with these tax forms, these W-9s and 1099s and things like that. So think about it. When you hire a plumber, you don't get a W-9 from the plumber. You just pay the plumber. It's up to the plumber to report honestly his income to the IRS. All right, let's say instead you are on the receiving end, that you did some work for a homeschool organization, and now they just sent you a W-2. You're an employee. I suppose you knew that, and I think you probably know what to do with W-2s. They're pretty straightforward. You put it on your tax return on line 7, which is where wages go in the 1040. They withheld probably some federal income tax, maybe. They probably paid your Social Security and stuff like that. That's pretty straightforward. Oh, we've got another question before I go on. Okay. If someone works for our group and is also paid by other groups, are they then considered an independent contractor? Hard to say because there's so many factors, but the fact that someone works for the general public, offers their services to the general public, would check the box in the independent contractor line. Okay. You could be an employee for one group and be an independent contractor for a different group. It all depends on those three things, who's the behavior, the financial control, how they're paid, and the relationship with the different organizations. So there are some people, like in our example earlier, someone said I was a piano teacher. A piano teacher could be an employee, or she could be an independent contractor, depending upon those other 20 factors. So it's not that easy to answer your question. I'm sorry, but one of the tests to make you look more like an independent contractor is the fact that you offered your services to the general public. Okay, let's say you did work for a homeschool group, and you knew you were working as an independent contractor, and now you get this 1099 miscellaneous. So let's pretend you're my friend Teresa. The 1099 miscellaneous says $1,200 on it. Teresa came to me and she said, I've always done my own taxes, never had any problem with it. I don't know what to do with this tax form. I don't know where to put it on the tax return. I don't know what to do. So I'm going to tell you what I did. When you are an independent contractor, you are considered a self-employed person. You are considered owning your own business. Chances are it's a sole proprietorship because you don't have any partners and you haven't formed a corporation. You are the sole owner of that business. And there is a form called a Schedule C. It's called Profit and Loss from Business. Schedule A is itemized deductions. Schedule C is if you have a small business, a sole proprietorship. And on Schedule C, that's where I said, Teresa, the top half of this shows what income you made, $1,200. The bottom half of the form, Teresa could list all of her expenses. So when you're an independent contractor, you can deduct a lot of things that go to help you generate that income. So this was considered professional development. If you have transportation expenses, driving, if you have art expenses, if you subscribe to magazines or if you read books all related to your occupation as an independent contractor, whatever business you're doing there, you can deduct those things on that thing called a Schedule C. So let's say in Teresa's example, I think she paid $300 to go to her Beth Moore workshop on Old Testament history. So the $1,200 now drops down to about $900. She has to pay income tax on that $900. It ends up showing up on her 1040 on the front page. And here's the kicker, though. She also has to pay something called self-employment tax on that $900. Self-employment tax is the tax that self-employed people pay to make up for, so it's the same as Social Security and Medicare. It equals 15.3% of your profit. So Teresa had to pay 15.3% of the $900 profit that she had working and teaching at the homeschool group. Okay, hope you follow all that. There is a schedule called Schedule SE where that Social Security, that 15.3%, is calculated to pay Social Security and Medicare. If you do run into a situation like this, I strongly recommend you get somebody who's knowledgeable about taxes to look over your tax return. You can prepare it yourself. And Teresa came to me and she said, Carol, I want you to prepare this, but I want you to show me what you did so I can do it myself next year. I said, fine, Teresa. By the time it got all said and done, Teresa was talking about, well, Carol, I'm going to hire you again next year because this was just, you know, she didn't feel confident in what she was doing and things like that. So usually when you get a 1099 miscellaneous and you have to file a Schedule C for your business profit or loss, that's the time when people usually stop preparing their own tax returns and get help preparing it. You can certainly do it yourself. It's in the software. If you do TurboTax and things like that, you can do it. I just recommend you get somebody to look it over. Okay, that is what I wanted to tell you about if you're on the receiving end, if you've been paid as a worker. So we have covered paying volunteers. We've covered the two types of workers, employees and independent contractors, how you tell the difference. It's not always very easy. The different kinds of forms you have to file if you have employees or the different forms you need to give your independent contractors if they made over $600 in a year. And finally, what to do if you receive a 1099 miscellaneous. So I have another question. If my group gives me under $600, am I required to report this on my taxes? You are required, yes. But is my group required to file anything on me? Isn't that a goofy thing? Question, guess 7, that is an excellent question. And it's just the goofy thing about the IRS. Yes, you, because you got paid, are supposed to report the money. All right? But no, the organization doesn't send anything to the IRS. Okay? So what it does is relieve a little bit of paperwork on your organization. Your organization likes that. You are still supposed to report it. Tell you what, if it's under $600, you could go ahead and fill out the whole Schedule C if you wanted to, report the income there. And if you have any expenses to take off of it, report it there, you know, so you're paying taxes only on your net profit. The other thing is you can just put it on the front page of the 1040 under other income, miscellaneous income. It's the last line of the whole line of things of income, other income. And you can just put it there. So long as that dollar amount is under $600, it doesn't set off any red flags. If it's more than $600, it'll set off a red flag. Your software will warn you. Whoops, this is too much money. The IRS will look at this. If it's under $600, they don't look at it. You don't pay self-employment tax if it's under $400. That window between $400 and $600 is a goofy window. You probably should put it on the Schedule C. Another one. But if parents pay the people directly, then my organization is not responsible for getting W-9. That is absolutely correct. And isn't that a wonderful thing? I try to encourage homeschool groups. If you're going to bring in a paid teacher, make sure those parents pay the teacher directly. Now, in my homeschool co-op, it works great because we only have 4 paid teachers and 20 volunteers. It works great. Those parents that want that paid teacher, pay that teacher directly. All right? Other homeschool groups, everybody's paid. And these parents are having to write 15 checks to all the different teachers. It becomes a little more of a headache. And that's when they hire me to talk to them and try to sort it out. And typically, we think that they're usually treated like employees. But your question is absolutely correct, that if parents pay the people directly, you, as the organization, are not responsible for getting a W-9, nor are you responsible for filling out 1099s. Okay, a couple more questions. Is there software for those who are independent contractors and get paid that takes them through all the forms? QuickBooks is kind of helpful, but you know what that is. That's the software to record your business transactions. You know, the software I use is it's what's in my head. It's reading these publications from the IRS and knowing what needs to be done when you're an independent contractor and how to fill out your tax forms. So there's kind of a combination of tax software and QuickBooks, which is just a way of recording your accounting expenses and stuff like that. Okay, another question. We just incorporated. Will we pay taxes? We are not 501c3. Excellent, excellent question. This is a little outside the scope of paying workers because now you're talking about corporate income tax. All right. And that's a whole other workshop, to be honest, but let me answer you quickly. You incorporated, hopefully incorporated as a nonprofit organization. That's good. And I answer this question quite a few times on my blog or in that book, yes, Question and Answers for Leaders. But you should probably file for 501c3 quickly. Quickly meaning within 15 months of the date of your incorporation. The IRS will give you an automatic 12-month extension, so you have up to 27 months, almost 2 years. The IRS is the one who grants tax exemption to homeschool groups. And if you don't get that tax-exempt status, then they're going to expect you to want to pay corporate income tax, even as a nonprofit corporation. Okay? That's the short and long of it. Yes, you might pay corporate income tax. You have until up to 27 months after you incorporated to get your 501c3 status with the IRS. Otherwise, you owe corporate income tax. Corporate income tax, by the way, is 15% on your net income, your leftover, your profit at the end of the year. That's a real quick answer. It gets more complicated than that, but that's a quick answer right now about homeschool groups. This has been great. Another question. So for an independent contractor, what does the one-time job, $400, does it need to be reported? Okay, let me clear this up. This is what's goofy about the IRS, too. They have these two benchmarks, $400 and $600, and they have not adjusted these in decades. Okay, ladies? $400 is the amount of profit you can make before you start paying self-employment tax. Okay? So if you have a very, very, very tiny business and you only made a profit of $300, woohoo, you don't pay self-employment tax. If you made over $400 profit and you're small business, you pay self-employment tax. That $400 has not been adjusted in decades. Decades. Okay? So basically, you have to pay self-employment tax any profit over $400 in your small business. Small business meaning working as an independent contractor. The goofy thing is, whoever you're working for doesn't have to give you a 1099 until you earn over $600. So what if you earn $500 or you made a profit of $500? Okay? Well, then you're supposed to pay your self-employment tax, but nobody reported your income to the IRS. So it's kind of a goofy mismatch of numbers, $400 for paying self-employment tax, $600 for reporting the income. All right, but yes, in essence, all income is supposed to be reported to the IRS. Now, people will ask me that. Oh, what dollar amount do I have to start reporting my income to the IRS? And I'll say, well, from the first dollar. It's a little different if you're a teenager. There are some exceptions, but that's why I wrote a whole other book called Teens and Taxes. That's a whole other website, teensandtaxes.com. If you have teenagers, you probably need to go over there and visit. Listen, you ladies and gentlemen, if you're out there, you're doing a great job, and I'm proud of you for getting the information to want to do things correctly. Don't be overwhelmed by this. Ask a lot of questions, get help, read a lot, and you're going to be fine. You know, you're going to be fine. You're going to be great. You're going to bless a lot of homeschool families and by running your organizations well, and I wish you long life and happiness. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.